And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Prophecy. You know, a lot of people give no credence at all to prophecy, and particularly to Bible prophecy. But frankly, my dear friends, I give so much credence to it. In fact, I would bank my life on it, that it's real, that it tells us where we're going. You know, it was prophecy that told us Jesus was going to come in the flesh. There are more than 300 prophecies in the Old Testament alone that point to the coming of Jesus Christ. And there are many, of course, in the New Testament that point to his second coming. And each one of these we must very carefully consider in the light of human history and the future. I want you to know that the Bible talks about us having a sure, S-U-R-E, word of prophecy. A sure word of prophecy. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Bible prophecy. And I'm going to show you some things going on in this old planet of ours that relate really to Bible prophecy, but just as equally strange and even bizarre, they relate to architecture, to buildings, to the artifacts around us. Artifacts. What is an artifact? Of course, it's an object. It's some kind of a piece of art, something shaped or designed in some way that's useful to us. Now, a tin can, of course, is an artifact. A hammer, a tool, is an artifact. Or a piece of clothing that can be traced back to the caveman or perhaps to the pioneers of the 18th century. All of these are artifacts. Artifacts we think of as something in a museum. But they can be very modern artifacts. And we can see them around us. And they've just been created in our lifetime. In fact, this very day, there are probably thousands of artifacts being created throughout the world. Now, as far as architecture goes, architecture is a building or a project, a useful project, created by the minds of men, but, well, sometimes those minds are stirred or pushed a certain way by beings other than men. You know, I've written an entire book entitled Mysterious Monuments about satanic architecture. And I'm right now in the midst of another book called Satan Lives Here, about a dark citadel being built around the world. It's going to be probably 6-9 months before the book comes out. Now, if you have seen Mysterious Monuments, I want to applaud you. Mysterious Monuments was not one of my best-selling books, but it was, to me, one of the most significant. And, you know, I never did quite understand why people did not grasp the importance of it. Now, other books they did, Codex Magica became a huge bestseller, and Circle of Intrigue, and even my book on DNA and the Jewish bloodline was a big seller. But Mysterious Monuments, people, I think, sort of, you know, scratched their heads and said, what do I do about this? You know, I recently had a couple of visitors to the ministry here. I filmed a video of, I guess, me talking mainly. And these were great, great men, Mr. Wittenberg and Stephen Anderson. And they wanted to do a video called Babylon USA. And they specifically wanted me to talk about United States architecture in Washington, D.C., and how it all related to the Bible prophecy, to Babylon, and had great significance according to the Bible prophecy. And, of course, you know, I did talk about that subject. It was very fascinating to me. They seemed to have lighted onto a project that I loved. Because all my life I've studied this particular topic. Satanic architecture right in front of us. And yet nobody knows even what it is. It's in plain sight. It's even, well, it dominates our nation's capital. All of the pagan and satanic artifacts, architecture of Washington, D.C. You know, I recently received I'm going to get into something quite important, and I'm sort of leading up to this, folks. So believe me, we're going to have some very interesting things today. But, I got wind of a project about the Temple of Baal. It seemed down in Palmyra, in Syria, the ISIS, terrorists were busy tearing down the old ancient pagan structures there. They were basically in Palmyra, they were, a tourist site. But it's interesting because they had this Temple of Baal. Who is Baal? Well, Baal was the devil. And what did they do at this temple? Well, they sacrificed human children. Now, did they only do this in ancient Syria? Oh, no. Read Book of Amos in the Bible. You'll find that the children of Israel also sacrificed their children, especially the firstborn, to the devil. They called him Baal. That's where the term, by the way, of Italian or Latin origin, you think of something as Bela. Bela. That's the female, of Baal. That means beautiful. Have you ever heard that? Oh, you're Bela. Oh, yeah. I would say you look like hell, but I suppose that means beautiful. Oh, Bela. Yeah, sure. Well, Temple of Baal. Now, what I read was, and this was just recently, a couple of weeks ago, was that these groups, and I think they're groups of Satanists, were building or planning to build Temple of Baal replicas and plant them in London, England, and in New York, because they saw New York and London as two world capitals of, let's just say, Gog of Magog. And so they took the Temple of Baal as a sample of this, or of this worship of the devil, and they're literally building temples of Baal replicas in New York City and London. Whether this is by design, of course it is. Think about it. I mean, we're talking about the Temple of Baal. And they wanted to plant it in New York and in London, another one just like it in London, where they could carry on pagan festivals and serve their false gods. Satanism is big today, Statues of Baphomet are being built around the United States. They're being constructed in front of courthouses. And think about this. The Temple of Palmyra in Syria, they had there, according to the United Nations, around 150,000 visitors per year. Why, this replica of the Temple of Baal in New York would probably have over 1 million visitors. And it might be that people would sacrifice their own children to the Temple of Baal in New York City and in London. Well, what would prevent them? Well, not much. In fact, there would probably be many abortions carried out in honor of Baal or Satan. I have a book here in my library about abortion being a witchcraft ritual. Oh, nobody ever thought of that. But I'm telling you, this book tells you that witches consider abortions sacrifices to their devil god, the Pan god, the god of the forest, the horned god. They get pregnant simply to have an abortion so that they can sacrifice the infant, because that's what it is, folks. It's a unborn child. I would actually say it's born. It may be inside the womb, but it's born already, being formed by the very hand of God. And they want to sacrifice it to the devil. Well, that's the purpose of that book. How many American women, how many women around the world donate their children to the devil by abortion. Now, this is a symbol of evil, a symbol of worship to the fire god. What is it doing in London? What is it doing in New York City? Well, there are many people there who do worship the devil. How many worship God do you imagine in New York City, in Manhattan? How many do you think? I can't think of many at all. New York is not known for its religious worship, at least of its Christian worship. Now, this is very important. This is where the great feast of the beast was held before the temple, the pyramid, the great marble pillars of Satan. Now, April 19th seems to be a meaningful date to these worshipers of Baal. It says in this article I've got here that this is a very auspicious time. It's halfway between the spring equinox and the summer solstice. It initiates a 13-day period in witchcraft and satanic cults known as the blood sacrifice to the beast, and it culminates in Beltane, the major festival for the worship of Baal, or, as is known in the Western world today, May Day. You heard of May Day? Oh, yes. Many children are taught about May Day, especially over in the Great Britain and the Isles. May Day. Did you ever wonder why the labor unions picked May 1st as the Labor Day? Mm-hmm. That was the day they worshiped. They took off their labor and worshiped the devil. I mean, Baal was the god of orgies, of child sacrifice. And they had the blood sacrifice to the beast. And now it's back again. Burning of the children. When I was a kid, we used to talk about the Maypole ceremony. The Maypole. Very phallic, by the way. And I won't talk about that, but, you know, bonfires were held and they would march around and dance around the Maypole, and then they would go out and have their sexual orgies and all of that. Well, it's back again. It's getting popular again, and so that's why we have the Feast of the Beast held before the Temple of Baal in New York and London. Now, I want you to understand that architecture is very important, and these great pillars of marble and alabaster and such, and stone that are erected in these temples of Baal have significance. They're not just pillars. Each one has a significance. And you'll find in my book, Mysterious Monuments, and everything. The obelisk is very significant. The great dome on our U.S. Capitol building is very, very significant and powerful. The pyramid over in Egypt and on our $1 bill, that's an interesting coincidence, isn't it, is of great significance. Now, America is very interested in architecture, obviously. We have some of the most famous buildings and monuments in the world. And it just so happened that we have just finished building, I think it was finished in 2012, although some construction may still be going on, a certain building. In the Middle East, we have built it. Now, this is one of the stories that's been the least reported on of any. We're carrying on a number of wars in the Middle East, of course. We started in Iraq, and then we went on to Afghanistan, and now we're into Syria. Of course, there's fighting going on in Lebanon and Palestine and Egypt. A huge revolution was conducted in Egypt. Of course, in Libya, where we overthrew Muammar Gaddafi. In Yemen, where the Saudi Arabians are monstrously murdering the people there. And, of course, in Iraq and Turkey, and where the Turkish troops of the Muslims and Prime Minister or President Erdogan is doing his foul deeds there. What an evil man he is, Prime Minister or President, that is, Erdogan. What's up in the Middle East? What's going on there? What are all these wars for? And why did the United States take over Iraq? What really happened there? And not just, we have had an ongoing war in Afghanistan longer than we were in the Vietnam. And it looks like we're going to stay a few years longer. I was recently reading the American troops evaluation there. The commander in Afghanistan says, we're no better off than we were when we went into Afghanistan. We're no better off. The Taliban is just as strong as it was when we first conquered it, or at least we tried to conquer it, but it just kept going. And now, of course, there is no real government in Iraq. Well, there's semi-government in Baghdad. And then, of course, there's the Kurd area. And then there's the Sunni area in the middle of the country. And, you know, all of these are in turmoil and chaos. And there's no real government to speak of. In Libya, we call that a failed government, meaning all these terrorist groups are fighting each other for control. Now, in the midst of all of these wars and conflicts going on in the Middle East, all begun by the United States of America and prosecuted by the United States of America, with thousands of American troops being killed, we go down and decide to build a certain building. Now, we're bombing cities, Fallujah, Mosul, and other cities throughout Iraq, destroying them, and totally destroying them. Of course, the power plants, the sewage plants, all those have to go too. All the roads are destroyed. The airports are destroyed. Basically, it's not a functioning country anymore, and ISIS is in the middle of it, and we're killing ISIS every day, or at least we claim we are, and they're killing Christians and Yazidis and others, and the war will never end, right? But we don't care about the war. We've got another interest in mind. We're building a building, a massive building, an incredible building. On the Tigris River in Iraq, it's the new United States Embassy in Iraq. Now, you may not imagine that we have much of a embassy building in Iraq. You may say, well, what do we need an embassy there for? There's all kind of buildings in downtown Baghdad. Why don't we just choose one of those buildings? We got plenty of billions of dollars we've blown there, so why don't we just spend a couple hundred million to buy a huge office building in Baghdad? Oh, no. You see, we've got a special purpose in Iraq. Now, Iraq did have about 22 million people when we started the war there in 2001, actually when it all started, 15 years ago or so, when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, his idiot, insane vice president, started the war. We were told, of course, there were weapons of mass destruction. That meant chemical, biological, nuclear. And that's why we had to go in there, because we were afraid that Iraq was going to bomb the United States. Now, nobody ever explained to us how they were going to get those bombs over to us. I mean, they don't have an air force. They don't have any ships. I suppose Saddam Hussein was going to put one of those nuclear bombs on his back and swim over. You think he could have done that, folks? Could have just swam over? Or maybe he was going to put it on a rubber band and just shoot it over to us on a rubber band. I don't know. Or use a bow and arrow. But it turned out he didn't have any nuclear bombs. Well, we still took Iraq, massive military forces. I mean, I would not think there would be much bragging over what we did in Iraq. Now, maybe we could brag in Germany in World War II, where Patton's tank troops went in and defeated the Germans, or the Russians defeated the Germans, or, you know, some, all of these great wars, or maybe Rommel, when we defeated Rommel in North Africa, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But not in Iraq, because that was sort of a pushover, wasn't it? And, you know, all that, they mostly were interested in getting away from us. Because whenever they tried to fight us, I mean, our superior tanks and helicopters and so forth just slaughtered the Iraqis. Wasn't much of a war at all, was it? What did it last? I don't know, a couple of weeks, maybe a month at the most. And we took Saddam Hussein, a very interesting character. We found him hiding supposedly in a foxhole, and we took him out and gave him a trial. He was the leader of Iraq, very popular there, by the way. The guy could go anywhere. He could walk downtown the street. He'd walk in a department store, walk down the street, go to any church he wanted, and nobody would try to kill the guy, which is very strange, since we told everybody that they all hated the guy. Everybody in Iraq hates Saddam Hussein. We're going to give them freedom and liberty and democracy. That's what George Bush and Dick Cheney said. Remember that? But evidently they were very happy with Saddam Hussein. Now in America, we have to defend our president with all these, you know, how many, 50, 100, I don't know how many Secret Service people. I mean, the guy walks in, we have defenders. And the Pope has to have a Pope mobile with bulletproof, you know, shatterproof glass on it and all that stuff, because people have tried to kill the Pope. Remember the Muslim guy, Mohammed, whatever his name, Agha, who tried to kill the Pope some years ago? Yeah, the Pope's life's in jeopardy. We've got to protect it. But Saddam Hussein, he could go anywhere. People loved him. They all had guns. They didn't have any Second Amendment problem to the Constitution. They didn't have a Second Amendment, but they still had freedom to go out and buy a gun. Everybody had a gun. They would shoot them up in the air to celebrate. When they had a big holiday, you'd hear thousands of guns going off. Man, I guess these liberals in America would have been frightened out of their wits. Oh, these guns, the guns. Well, Saddam Hussein would go give big speeches. And then he would take his own rifle and shoot it in the air. And then they would take all their rifles and shoot it in the air. It just didn't seem like the Americans were telling the truth about Saddam Hussein. It seemed like the people loved the guy. Well, they may have loved him, but we killed him. We murdered him. We gave the guilty guy a fair trial. Oh, wait, that didn't sound right, did it? The guilty guy a fair trial. Yeah. There's an old song by Johnny Cash, you know, called Cocaine Blues. Said the judge, you know, started to look about, and he gave the jury about, what, 2 minutes? They found him guilty, found the cocaine guy guilty. And he was guilty, of course. But it didn't take long. Didn't take long to find Saddam Hussein guilty, and so we hung him. We literally hung the guy. Of course, now it's come about that ISIS took over that area of the country, and the Iraqi judge that sentenced Saddam Hussein to death has been put to death himself, which sort of makes the Bible's statement, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword, true, doesn't it, my friends? The judge who found Saddam Hussein guilty and sent him to die has himself been killed. Now, we're building we have built, in Iraq, the largest embassy building in the world. Now, Iraq had 22 million when we started murdering people there. They say there's 4 million less people today. That means that 4 million, there's about 18 million in Iraq. That's all. 18 million. Well, you know, there's 23 million people in Texas, the state of Texas. We have more people in the state of Texas than they have in Iraq. We've killed, or they've vanished somehow. They've vanished as prisoners of war, or maybe they've come over as migrants trying to escape the bombings and the killings by the Americans and the others. Right now, a lot of people are killing each other in Iraq. We're giving billions of dollars in armaments to the Jordanians to kill people there. We're giving billions of dollars to the Israelis to go in and kill people there. We're giving billions of dollars to the Turks to go in and kill people there. And the Saudi Arabians, of course, have billions of dollars in the United States, and they're going in and killing people there. I would not doubt it at all if we were paying the Ayatollahs of Iran to go in there and kill people. But we're paying five or six different nations to kill people in Iraq. It seems like we don't have much love for those Iraqi people. And, of course, we never did give them democracy, you know. But we have built this huge embassy for them. The American embassy in Iraq. Now, you know, I've been around the world, and I've seen a lot of U.S. embassy buildings, but I've never seen one like this one. This is the greatest United States embassy ever built in the entire world. Now, you doubt me, dear friends? Then Google it up. Check out this embassy. We have spent billions of dollars to build it. Now, there are places in the world, countries that are twice as big as Iraq, that only have about 55 or 100 embassy personnel. But would you believe we've got 20,000? 20,000 workers at the embassy in Iraq? What are 20,000 people doing there? Now, Iraq's not much of a country. Nothing much is left. The eastern part of Iraq, where this embassy is, where Baghdad, the capital city, is located, you know, doesn't have much of a government left, but they're working with the Shiites of Iran, and they're fighting the Sunnis and the others down in the central part, the ISIS folks. And that, of course, is the curse. I don't want to get, let's not get mixed up in all that, but let me just say that the breaking apart, the partitioning of Iraq was all decided before we ever went in there. Now, it was one country with a very diverse population and one country led by one man of the Ba'ath Party, B-A-T-H Party, the Ba'athist Party, Saddam Hussein. But we went in there with the specific objective of destroying the country, of deconstruction, and we had already determined which parties would own which parts. We gave the Shiites the western part. We gave the Sunnis, now ISIS, the middle part and the western part. I did say, what did I say? Eastern? Yeah, it was eastern for the Shiites. And north and a little bit to the south, we gave them to the Kurds. K-U-R-D-S. This was approved by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, headed by a man named Joe Biden. Back when he was a U.S. Senator, he was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and they voted. In fact, the entire Senate voted on this and decided what to do with Iraq. Now, this was interesting because we had never had anything to do with Iraq. There was no war going on there. There was nothing, just Saddam Hussein. What did we have to do with dividing the country into three pieces, into three parts, led by people that had religious views that were different? Now, I want you to understand this. We divided up Iraq into three parts before we ever went there and conquered it, before we even thought about it. Isn't that strange of us? It shows we think ahead, doesn't it? We planned the war long before the war began. It's sort of like in, you know, the year 1500, planning the war against the British in the 1770s. How could that be? Well, there's a lot of foresight going in the Middle East. In fact, we know all about the Middle East and what's going to happen 15, 20, 50 years from now. They plotted it all out. It's all planned out, my friends. Everything. You can't stop future history, can you? Future history? I'll be right back with a lot more about the embassy of the United States in Baghdad, the largest embassy in the world and one of the smallest countries in the world. Now, think about that. One of the largest, well, it is. It is the largest United States embassy in all of the world. And it's been built in one of the smallest countries on earth. Think about that for just a moment. I'll be right back. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Hello, good friends. Do you want to learn about future history? Well, you can go to a book called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion and learn about future history. In fact, it's something that's been going on for a long time. This book was first discovered in 1905, published by a Russian monk named Sergius Nilus. But you know, people were afraid of this book. They were frightened of the Jews, feared the Jews. I wanted to have a copy for folks to read. A lot of people wrote to me and said, have you ever read the Protocols? We'd like to know where we could get a copy. Well, I found out you couldn't get a copy. You really couldn't buy a copy. So I decided to publish it, but I was told, well, if you publish that text, the Jews, well, you'll be dead. They'll kill you. Well, you know, I just don't like being threatened. Well, you're going to kill me. That's up to you and God, but don't threaten me. So I went in and published it. In fact, I even wrote a foreword for it. In fact, I put extra writings in by Henry Ford, the great industrialist, and others. And, of course, the pure and unvarnished Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, 33rd degree. So there it is. I put a fancy cover on it. As I told you, I even wrote the foreword for it. We do things here at Power of Prophecy that we're told we cannot do. They said this book has been banned, and no book company in the world dares to publish it. The Jews, well, I've published it. We've had it out there, I don't know, what, 5-6 years. And I'm telling you, my friends, this book is real. This is authentic. Somebody said, that's been proven to be a forgery. Really? Who proved it? That's nonsense. And if it was a forgery, what would it be a forgery of? Think of that just a minute, my friends. If it's a forgery, what is it a forgery of? Oh, the original, the authentic. You get into sort of a tongue twister there, don't you, my friends? This book will tell you what the Jews intended. It talks about the great serpent, the Ouroboros, his slithering path across the whole world. He will gobble up country after country, and he has gobbled up country after country. And we're waiting our turn here in the United States, and the Jews have gobbled up our own country, and they tell everybody here what to do. We'll be surprised very soon to see what Donald Trump is going to do. Why, he has a daughter that's married to a Jew. His daughter has changed her religion to Judaism. That's strange, isn't it? The Protocols. I want you to have a comment. You need to know what the Jews have done and what they're going to do. It says in there they don't believe in borders. They're going to open up every border and have unbridled immigration. Well, that's what we're having now. We're following the plan of the Jews and its Protocols. That's why we have all of these millions of Muslim immigrants. They say, well, we'll have no religion. All the religions will all be practiced together. Except, of course, the Jews' religion will be kept sacrosanct. It alone will be kept separate. All the races will be mixed together, but one will not be mixed. That will be the Jewish race. And there will be a great dictator of the whole world. He will be called a king despot. The Messiah of the Jews. Who will the Messiah be? Well, he will be possessed by the serpent. By the serpent! That's a revelation, isn't it? The serpent? I've been working now for a good number of months on a new book that'll come out very soon. In fact, I think June the 1st. It's entitled Holy Serpent of the Jews. The Holy Serpent of the Jews? Yes, they pray to him. He's their Messiah, the Holy Serpent. Oh, that can't be. Why, they worship, the Jews worship the God of the Old Testament, don't they? Oh, my friends, so much of this world we need to study about. We need to discover. We need for God to open up our minds so we can understand the power of Satan and know that our God is all-powerful. He will rule. And he will see to it, my friends, that you and I as Christians are overcomers. But you have to know what's going on in the world. And I want you to get this book, Protocols of Zion. It's $20. Please add $5 shipping and handling. As for Protocols of Zion, it'll come to you, of course, in just a regular envelope. People won't know you're ordering the Protocols of Zion. You don't have to worry about it. Order the book today, Protocols of Zion. $20, $5 shipping and handling, a total of $25. You can do it by phoning us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Or you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com, or textmars.com, and order it there on our website with your, use one of your charge cards or maybe your PayPal number. And of course, you can write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And now, let's return, dear friends, to Power of Prophecy. We're talking today about the Embassy of the Illuminati. Well, actually, it's the Embassy of the United States in Baghdad. But I call it the Embassy of the Illuminati. Now, why do I do that? First of all, I want you to understand, this is the largest embassy ever built. Now, we have quite an embassy in Moscow, Russia. I mean, think of everything we have to deal with there. You know, Vladimir Putin and all of those secret police and all of the spy agency activities we have going on and all the diplomatic mission and the economic missions and so forth and so on. But this is bigger than the embassy in Moscow. And, of course, the embassy in Great Britain in London would be large, wouldn't it? How about Paris, France? That's large, right? Brussels, Belgium. Tokyo in Japan. How about Beijing and Red China? What a huge embassy we must have. I mean, 1 billion, over 1 billion Chinese people. We have a huge embassy there, don't we? How about India? There's also another billion people in India. Regardless of what country it is, none of these embassies compare with the great embassy. Let me read to you here. I have a little information paper about this embassy. It says, at 104 acres, it is the largest and most expensive embassy in the world. It's as large as Vatican City. It employs 15,000 people. I understand it's now 20,000. It originally cost $750 million to build, but now the United States has admitted up to $6 billion in building. And all of this money was approved by the U.S. Senate and the House. Wow. Why would we go in and spend $6 billion on this gigantic embassy? They say the walls were built to withstand any measure of bombs. There's no blast is going to take down this building. In fact, it's a series of buildings. Now, it's an astonishing thing. Whenever we conquered Iraq, we first set up office, had the U.S. Embassy, and believe it or not, the palace of Saddam Hussein. Now, if you keep up with Power of Prophecy Ministries and our monthly newsletter, you probably saw there the picture we had of a Jewish rabbi from New York State sitting on the throne in the palace of Saddam Hussein in Baghdad's Green Zone. Now, what was a New York rabbi in a U.S. military uniform doing sitting on Saddam Hussein's golden throne? Well, I'm going to let you ponder that for just a minute. But even then, we had in mind the new embassy that was opened in 2009 and continued to be built. And I understand that they said it was finished in 2012, but they continue construction on it. Now, it just so happens that if you're one of the 15 to 20,000 people that work there, you might be surprised at how many Israelis work there. Oh, Israelis? Isn't this an Iraqi embassy of the United States? Wouldn't we have Americans there working with Iraqis? That's a 20,000? Oh, no, wait. You listen to me very closely, my friends. This is an embassy built by the United States for the Israelis. Oh? This is that's called the American Embassy or the Embassy of the United States. But you better believe it. This is an Israeli embassy. We paid $6 billion for the Israelis. Why would the Israelis need an embassy in Iraq? You know, there are a lot of mysteries in this world, my friends, a lot of mysteries. And if you really set your head to thinking, you'd understand why these things occur. You see, the nation of Israel is not finished. The nation of Israel, if you look at the Israeli flag, you see the Jewish Star of David, the six-pointed star. And above it is a wide blue stripe. And below it is another blue stripe. These are emblems of the great rivers, the Nile River in Egypt, and the great Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Iraq. The Jews claim that all the land between the Nile and Tigris and Euphrates belonged to them. That's the meaning of their flag and those two great bars of blue. Now, of course, the United States always puts the bill for Israel. We have given trillions of dollars to Israel. But why would we pay $6 billion for an embassy that is run and controlled by the Israelis? Well, you know, that's a sort of like all of the prison camps that we built. After we conquered the Iraqi people, we took the prisons they had, and we even built more prisons, and we started putting the Iraq citizens in there, men, women, and children. Now, what did we do with these Iraqi prisoners? Well, first, our CIA was brought in, and the Army Special Forces were brought in, and they worked hand in glove with Israeli monsters, that means Israeli Secret Service agents and Mossad spies, in torturing and persecuting the Iraqis. Thousands of poor, persecuted Iraqis were sent into prisons. And there they were tortured. There they were sexual things were done to them. Now, friends, if you haven't seen the pictures of the United States troops alone sexually tormenting the Iraqis, you hadn't seen anything. I'm telling you that we had prisons not only at Abu Ghraib, but across Iraq where we horribly persecuted the Iraqis. Now, what were we trying to get from the Iraqis? They were already a defeated people. They had no nuclear bombs or anything else. They had this poor excuse of a military that was quickly defeated. But we still brought thousands of Iraqis and we put them in American-made prisons throughout Iraq. And there we tortured them. We sexually raped them. Men, women, and boys were raped by American officers. But that's not all. All of the rape and the torture was overseen, was supervised by Israelis. Now, Brigadier General Janice Karpinski was the commanding officer, but she didn't have any charge of the prisoners. She just made sure that everything went right at the prison. You know, all the American soldiers and the others got to eat right, had nice beds to sleep on. She took care of the welfare of the troops. But she said she noticed how many Israelis were there. But she didn't have any contact with them. But they were there, working with the CIA and the U.S. Army. What were we after? Why were we torturing these people? By the way, there are many stories, many true stories. There's the Iraqi general that we beat severely till his body was all black and blue. And still he didn't tell us what we wanted to hear. So we put him in a sleeping bag and stomped on him some more. Well, unfortunately, we forgot to unzip the bag and he died of asphyxiation. He suffocated to death. That was just one guy. So we got threw the body out, grabbed a couple more, put them in sleeping bags after beating them. That's what we do, friends. We're Americans. We love to torture. Now, I know General Michael Hayden, head of the CIA for 7-8 years. General Hayden says we don't torture as Americans. What a horrible liar that man is. If you don't think even waterboarding is torture, General Hayden, give me and my friends here about 10 minutes with you. We'll waterboard you, and you'll be screaming in pain and terror. Instead, you're dressed in your nice little suit coat and your tie and your white shirt, and you're saying, we didn't torture, when everybody knows we torture. Why were we torturing? You see, we thought they would know something very important. We tortured thousands of Iraqis to discover ancient Israeli manuscripts, where they were, who was keeping them, what museums. They said, "That what is that text? You mean we tortured all of those Iraqis to find out where these..." You see, let me explain something to you. Iraq is ancient Babylon. In fact, Saddam Hussein was planning to rebuild ancient Babylon. And one of the most prideful pictures that the United States military forces have is a picture of a U.S. F-15 or F-16, I can't remember, aircraft as it landed in the desert and just ponied right up to the great ruins of ancient Babylon. And we parked our aircraft right there and took pictures of it. Oh, didn't that show victory? We conquered Babylon. But you see, the Jews wanted more. The Jews had been taken prisoners of the Babylonians way back in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, in the days of Meshach, Abednego, and Shadrach, the three that were put into the furnace there. The days of course, of Daniel, the great prophet Daniel. And then, of course, the days of Belteshazzar. Remember when the finger came down and wrote on the wall? The great finger of God? Must have been God. Said, you've been tried in the balances and found wanting. And your kingdom is lost this very day. And it was. And the Jews were taken prisoner. You remember Jeremiah told the king of Israel, don't let Nebuchadnezzar, don't let the Babylonians even visit our city. They'll see the riches we have. And they'll want to take everything for themselves. Well, he wasn't listened to. They were so proud, the Jews, of everything that they owned and all the treasures. And so they let Nebuchadnezzar see it. Well, he wanted to take it. He had one of the greatest empires in the world, and he took it. And for 70 years, he took the Jews captive. Read the book of Daniel and see what they did there in that 70 years. There they were. But he favored them, you see, because Nebuchadnezzar was actually anointed by God. A lot of people forget that, but he was anointed by God, and he was used by God to punish the Jews. He punished the Jews of Israel. He conquered Jerusalem, and he took them captive for 70 years. And they did some strange things while they were there. The rabbis who were evil back in Israel became even more evil. And they began to write, they mixed in the gods of Babylon with the God of the Old Testament. You can't do that, friends. But they did. That's where we have the Kabbalah and the Talmud to this very day. The Talmud and the Kabbalah began to be written in ancient Babylon. And those ancient Talmuds still exist. And Saddam Hussein was collecting all of the Talmuds. The Talmud is a holy book. It contains all of the 613 laws of the Jews and the commentary for them. And then the Kabbalah, of course, are the books of magic and superstition and of demonic evil. And those were also written because they have to do with the Babylonian gods and goddesses and how they mixed up all the Jews and the worship of God, our God, with them. And Saddam Hussein had done years of research on this. And he had planned to expose to the world what the Jews did when they were captives of the Babylonians. The evil that they did, the wickedness that they had performed. And he wanted to show the world that the Talmud was a wicked, evil book of the Jews written by the rabbis, working hand in glove with the ancient high priest of the gods and goddesses of ancient Babylon. They worshiped the dragon. They worshiped the serpent. They abandoned God. Of course, God did restore the wall under Nehemiah. I don't want to get into the Bible here very much, but you'll want to read it for yourself. Jeremiah prophesied correctly. And after 70 years, they were returned. And they rebuilt the wall in Jerusalem. But Saddam Hussein, he was considered an evil man by the Jews. In fact, did you know that for two years in a row, they named him the Haman of the year? Who's the Haman of the year? Well, Haman is the evil guy. Read, if you'd like to, the story of Esther in the Bible. Haman, well, anyway, Haman, as you know, was the high priest. He was the vizier, the sort of like the prime minister for the king. He was going to put all the Jews to death on a certain day, but it ended up with him going to the gallows. And his 10 sons were also hung. But that's another story for another day. But what I want to tell you is that the Talmud was written during that period. The Talmud was not written by God, but by demonic Jewish rabbis working with Babylonian high priests, who also wrote many of the books that are now part of the Kabbalah. which is a horrible system of magic and superstition. And Saddam Hussein and his scientists and his historians had found all this stuff, and they were collecting all of the books. Think about that. They were going to spring on the world all the books of the Jews, the ancient books. And Israel told America, we Jews want you to go in and conquer that nation. Make up any excuse you want, United States, but conquer Saddam Hussein, conquer Iraq, and take those ancient records, those ancient manuscripts. Do you doubt me, friends, what I'm telling you today? Well, let me read to you from the New York Times, dated May 7th, 2003, Baghdad, Iraq, May the 6th. It says, what began today is a hunt for an ancient Jewish text at secret police headquarters. Wow. Here, wound up unearthing a trove of Iraqi intelligence documents in one huge room in the flooded basement of the building. American soldiers from MET Alpha, the Mobile Exploitation Team. There was a team sent by the Americans. Colonel Salazar was in charge of it, but also Colonel Richard McPhee was in charge of it, according to this article. MET Alpha, the Mobile Exploitation Team, searched for these ancient documents in Iraq for 3 months after we won the war. We sent this special team in to find these ancient Jewish documents. Wow. They found, well, my goodness gracious. The discoveries, which American military officers called significant. The team's leader was Chief Warrant Officer Richard Gonzalez, but he was led by Colonel Richard McPhee. What they found were precious books and holy text. The team chaplain, what did they do with the team chaplain? Shook his head in disbelief. They found documents that were stored under 4 feet of murky, fetid water. Dead animals floated on the surface. There were shards of glass, pieces of smashed walls, other bombing debris. They were in search of holy textbooks. Wow. They found hundreds of books floating in the foul water. They rescued 3 bundles of older Jewish books, including a Babylonian Talmud from Vilna. And they also located the accounting books, the money books, the accounting books of the Jewish community of Baghdad, and dozens more modern scholarly books. They turned over one large truckload of intelligence documents to the Defense Intelligence Agency. What was the Defense Intelligence Agency concerned with the ancient Jewish religious textbooks, including an ancient copy of the Talmud? Is that why we invaded Iraq? To rescue these ancient texts that were found in this bombed out building? But we led an entire mobile exploitation team, MET Alpha, to find? Oh, yes. Dear friends, they weren't looking for nuclear biological warfare tools. They were looking for the Jewish ancient documents that would prove how murderous, how treacherous, how filthy and dirty and polluted were the minds of the Jewish rabbis who lived in ancient Babylon, who helped the high priest of Babylon write these damning books. And then they found a wooden box with Hebrew writing. Now, they were aided on their intelligence search by a man named Ahmad Shalabi. Maybe you've read about Ahmad Shalabi. He's the guy that helped lead this whole, the whole United States mission, the whole invasion of Iraq. He was down there with them. Now, these precious religious documents of the Jews that had been found in ancient Babylon and were unsurfaced by Saddam Hussein, who was ready to spring them on the whole world, but he never got a chance. They were then brought to America, to Texas. And there, teams of scientists pieced them together and took out all of the sewage water and dried them very, very carefully. And so we spent millions of dollars to restore all of these documents, including that ancient Talmudic textbook. You see, the Talmud today is called the Babylonian Talmud. That's the name of the book that all the Jews believe is their sacred holy book. It's greater than the Bible. They say it's more important for a Jewish rabbi to study the Babylonian Talmud than if he were to study the Bible. Well, in any case, they were cleaned up. We spent millions of dollars. And now, here's another article from Haaretz, daily newspaper of Israel. And Israel is saying, we want these documents back. What do you mean, want them back? For over 2,000 years, they belonged to Iraq, to Babylon, to Samaria. They belonged to, they want them back for all the, remember when we went over to the museums? Remember all those stories in the newspapers at the time? Our troops went into those museums looking for stuff. That's what they were doing, folks. We were crawling all over Iraq looking for these ancient documents. We wanted to save the necks of the Jews. Plus, we would discover the Khazarian thesis was correct. We now know through DNA that the Khazarians are the Jews, and the Jews that lived in Babylon at that time, they never became the Jews of today. Don't you know, my friends, it says in Revelation, it says, it talks about them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. It's the synagogue of Satan that wants to hide their foul works of thousands of years. They want to hide the fact that they're Khazarians from Khazaria. They want to hide all these things. And you have to understand, they're the synagogue of Satan. All those people were tortured sexually, physically. And George Bush enjoyed the torture. Oh, yes. He looked at it on closed-circuit TV in the White House. He watched it as it occurred. He and his filthy, dirty friend, the Vice President of the United States. And now this embassy of the United States, let me explain something. The American embassy, the largest in the world, is actually the Israeli embassy for Greater Israel. It's the headquarters building for Israel, and they're planning to take over the whole world with that. That's their building. We spent $6 billion to build an Israeli New World Order Illuminati embassy, with which they will have over 20,000 people working in there, all planning their filthy, dirty plots. How did they take over the Ukraine? Remember that? The Ukraine? Oh, yeah. By working in this embassy. It's still there in Iraq today. This great embassy. Think about it. A little old country of 18 million people, and we have the largest embassy in the world. And our Congress spent over $6 billion for it. It's got everything. Tennis courts, swimming pools, offices. And, of course, all those intelligence analysts from Israel and the United States, the CIA, and on and on. They're planning all the wars for the future. They're planning on ISIS. We're funding ISIS. Everything is going on over in Syria and the Middle East today because of this great embassy. This is the embassy from hell, the embassy of the Illuminati in Baghdad on the Tigris River. I'm Tex Mars, my friends. You've been listening today to Power of Prophecy. Tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.